We're so professional.
What is happening? Oh my goodness. What is that? Do you hear that?
I don't know.
What is it doing? Should we move to the laptop? No, it was so good. Okay, we're just gonna act like that didn't happen. And we're gonna get started.
Let's get started.
Sure.
I walked okay. through the outline, so. Hey guys, welcome to Shaylee and Katie, the podcast, coming to you from Springfield, Missouri. We have an amazing guest, remote guest tonight.
Remote, it's our first
remote guest.
Skype interview.
Her name is Olivia Puccini, and she's the best, the literal best.
She's literally the best.
She's originally from here in the U.S., but is currently living in Tallinn, Estonia, with her husband Nick, her two beautiful kids, Olivia. Oh, Oliver.
Oliver.
She's Olivia. Her son's Oliver.
See Ava. What she did there.
She's an author, church planter, singer, wife, and mother, and we want to find out a little bit about how she does it all with so much class.
So much class.
But before we get to know Olivia...
We have
to thank our amazing fake sponsor. tonight we are sponsored by Skype. Wow. What a big sponsor.
It's a pretty big sponsor. They heard we were interviewing Olivia and that she was from Tallinn.
Yeah.
So they actually invented the hardware for Skype or the software for Skype.
Wait, for real?
Yes.
Seriously, wow.
They legitimately did. I heard they invented Skype, but I think it's like up in that area. But
gotcha.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So obviously they just threw a bunch of money at us.
Obviously.
And so now we need some taglines for Skype.
Skype.
Skype. Skype.
Skype. You're supposed to be dead silent after that.
I know. That's funny. I liked it. That's a good tagline. I don't know how to spell that, but that's good.
Boop, boop.
Skype. That thing that's kind of like FaceTime.
I remember that.
That feels like a diss. Skype is not going to be happy with these taglines.
No. Let's see.
Skype. So your grandma can see your kids' first steps once it stops buffering.
Skype. But in Tallinn, Estonia, they have city-free They have
Wi-Fi.
City-wide free Wi-Fi everywhere.
Oh, man.
You can just, like, cartwheel around.
What
like,
if you live in the middle of the country in Estonia?
I think it's everywhere. It's like a satellite. They're advanced.
Come on, Springfield.
Right?
Come on, Springfield. Okay. But in real life, Skype's not a real sponsor.
Yet.
However, they did make this interview possible.
They did. Thanks, Skype.
So without further ado, let's get to know Olivia Puccini. I want to cover the basics. Shaylee knows more about you than I do, so...
I do.
If you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I'm 37 years old, soon to be 38 in September.
Yeah.
And she looks about 25.
Oh, right, yeah.
She does.
Thank you. I knew I needed to keep you around more,
Shaylee. She does.
And then what is your job? If someone asks you what your job is, what do you tell them?
That's a hard thing to say, but I would say I'm the creative arts pastor at Focus Church, but I'm also a missionary sent out with an organization in America.
Very cool.
Awesome. And where do you live?
I live in Tallinn, Estonia, but right now I'm speaking to you from Seattle, Washington.
Awesome. Mm. You're already the most interesting person I've ever met. and then how do you know Shaylee?
How do I know Shaylee? Shaylee came with her husband, Jonathan, to Estonia quite a few years ago, even before we started Focus Church, when Nick and I had just maybe lived there a year or less. And she came to shoot a professional video as a part of a team. And so they shot kind of an exposure video so that others could learn more about what our dreams were for Estonia and also get to see the country and the needs there.
Yeah, Jonathan and I were just talking about that video yesterday because we're putting together a new website, and he said that was one of his favorite videos
that he's ever put together. Yeah, I just put it up on our new website that we're launching. I love it. You guys did a great job.
Oh, that's what I was fishing until you complimented the video.
Yeah, okay. Now I want to.
I'm just kidding.
Now I want to go find it.
I'll show it to you later, Katie.
Yeah, it's going to make me go to Estonia.
You're going to move there.
Awesome. Okay, so we're gonna go ahead and enter into our topic. We have a couple topics we wanna discuss with you.
Well, first we're gonna segue into the topic with mental health and motherhood by a quick 30-second story of Katie last night. Was having a really good night, and she's like, I listened through one of the podcasts, and I have notes I'm going to send over and all this stuff, and I never heard from her again. And she came in and said that her children had gotten into paint.
They got into some paint. They got into some paint, and they painted some things that weren't meant to be painted.
And you looked like you had this just, like, the most defeated...
And a little breakdown. Little breakdown. And it had been a really good day until that point. But it's funny how a little thing can turn your entire mood right around. So, but I love this topic, and I want to hear, like, how you became passionate about this topic. So tell us everything.
Sure. I think my first introduction to mental health probably came when I was younger. My mother battled with depression for over 15 years, so I saw her battle that, and then had my first experience where I actually had to see a counselor myself when I was 14 and ended up being anorexic. And so at the age of 14, the doctors had threatened to make me go to one of those live-in recovery centers for eating disorders, and I kind of made a deal with them that if I would start to eat and meet with a counselor in my hometown, that they would let me stay at least and try to get over the anorexia there. So I started seeing a counselor when I was about 14 for anorexia. Once I felt like I got a handle for that, you know, with that, I saw her again before I moved off to college, because I knew that would be another challenge, just going off on life my own and trying to survive on dormitory food. Mm-hmm. And then... really, it came up again, I would say, after I became a mom, not postpartum depression, but just between living in different countries. We lived in Armenia for 8 years before we moved to Estonia 4 years ago. And during those transitions, I just had found myself really depressed. And so I've seen some counselors for depression. And most recently, after moving to Estonia, I saw a counselor for depression that I continue to see today, because she's just so excellent. And if you've ever worked with counselors before, you know you can have ones that are really good or ones that will not help you very much. And I've had both. But this one that I have now has really challenged me and helped me to grow leaps and bounds. And so I try to write about it as much as I can. I try to share about it, because I just have seen it be so life-changing to have that sort of input in my life.
Yeah, that's amazing. When you say write about it, do you mean publicly or just journaling?
Blog.
Your blog.
Yeah, I keep a blog. I have a website that is oliviapuccini.com, and I write about it. I write about, you know, what I've learned in counseling with depression, obviously. Another thing, probably my most highly read blog, is about, you know, actually when I went into my counselor and had to deal with the thoughts of just not even wanting to be married anymore. Mm-hmm. So that was a very honest I guess, road that I had to walk through with my husband, Nick, and with the help of counseling. And so so I write about that very publicly on my blog, because I think those are things a lot of people deal with, but few people talk about. I've also done a few blog posts about cognitive behavioral therapy, what a lot of therapists will teach you in order to change and to improve your mental health as well.
So, okay. So break down what you were just talking about, the cognitive... Mm-hmm.
Yes. Cognitive behavioral therapy is something that a lot of therapists use. And, you know, so many of us get stuck in these kind of ruts of thinking patterns that are established even when we're really young. And so what cognitive behavioral therapy does is it really teaches you to pay attention to your emotions, to pay attention to your feelings, to no longer feel guilt about them, but to really explore them and get curious, and then take a few steps back and see what is really going on inside your mind that creates those feelings. Mm-hmm. And little by little, you start to replace those feelings with truth. You start to replace those thoughts with truth. And as you continue to be faithful with this cognitive therapy process, you can literally kind of reroute the way you think and challenge the way that you think and reestablish new pathways of thinking that have been there even maybe since you were a child.
Wow, that's wow. So that, okay, so is a really like dumbed down version of that would be like, I'm getting in a fight with everyone in my life and I'm like, getting in a fight with Jonathan and bickering and all this stuff. And then I work it back to like something to where like, I didn't sleep at all last night, or I'm really upset about this situation or stressed out with work. And then I realize it's affecting my life and my thoughts and my mind and my relationships in all sorts of different ways. But I don't think it's that.
Yeah, that's one way. Or it's even identifying self-talk that, like I said, maybe it's been there since you were a kid and it's actually negative or not helpful. And you start to realize, you kind of slow down your thought process and actually journal. A lot of them want you to keep thought journals, to where you can literally establish what sort of thoughts are going on in your head that move just so lightning fast that create these feelings in you. And so then once you can identify those, you can start to replace them and retrain them.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Would you mind going into like a specific example as far as like the marriage one for you? Is there anything you identified that was helpful?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I'm, you know, 37, almost 38, and I'm pretty sure I went through a midlife crisis over the last few years, and I never thought those were really that real, or maybe I thought it was just like an old man buying a Corvette or something like that, but I think I realized that I had this dream of singing, and I had this dream of writing, and suddenly when you're getting in your upper 30s, you know, approaching 40, you start to reevaluate and think, what am I really doing? And my young years are gone. And so I think that even went over into my marriage, where I just started thinking, was this the romance? Was this the Prince Charming? Was this the life that I always mm-hmm. thought I would have, you know, as a little girl? And I allowed myself to start to think that it wasn't living up. And pretty much through this whole process of cognitive therapy, I can see a reoccurring pattern that even showed up in the anorexia, and that is that I just am constantly trying to find my value and my beauty from mm-hmm. something other than just who I am and who God created me to be and who He says I am. And so I tried out for Estonian Idol, which is the version of American Idol, mm-hmm. to try to
slip, you know, that in
my singing in Estonia. And I applied to 2 master's degree programs in writing at Cambridge and Oxford. And
oh my gosh,
I thought about leaving my marriage. You know, these are all things because I think I was trying to, there's this one psychologist I read a lot. Her name is Brené Brown. And
she says
that you start to hustle for your worth. And that's what I was doing. Instead of being at peace, I was hustling for some sort of worth, trying to get it from somewhere. And so through this cognitive therapy process, I realized that even from the time I was little, and this showed up in the anorexia and all this stuff, that I just had a core belief that I had to find my value somewhere else. And so now that I start to think those things, or I notice those feelings coming up, I'm more aware of them. Before, maybe I wasn't even aware that I was having these feelings. I just would go with the emotions of, oh, I don't want to be in my marriage, or I wish I was doing a different career, all these things. But the reality is that I'm very blessed, and I have everything I always wanted, but the reality is different than the fantasy. And the reality is that my value will never be found in those things. And so I've had to retrain my thinking along those lines through cognitive therapy. And it's still such a process, but I guess that would be one example.
That's amazing.
Gosh, you're giving me chill bumpies. I remembered I was trying to explain you to Katie, and I realized I only like spent maybe 3 days with you like 4 years ago.
You leave an impact.
But you, yeah, I just kept like saying, like, I don't know, you just have a, I feel like you've always had just a good like insight to things. And that's kind of, I mean, it sounds like you've obviously been through so much and have so much that you can share like with other people. But even, I don't know, I feel like you break it down in a really good way that my brain can't do. So this is perfect.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah, that's amazing. Do you have any tips for how that applies to motherhood too? Because I am relating to every word you're saying as far as building everything up as a fantasy. And then the reality, even though it's everything you ever wanted, going, why is it not quite what I imagined? You know, what's missing, or what can I hustle for to make it better, or whatever? Or maybe I just did it wrong, or So, yeah, I'd love to hear more about the motherhood part of that struggle.
Yeah, the motherhood part for me, I've noticed even, you know, we're back in America just for the summer doing some support raising, and I'm with my kids, you know, 100% of the time. And I think it's easy, once again, like when you're hustling for your worth and you're very driven, as I'm sure you two both are, because you're developing this podcast and you're trying to, you know, speak into people's lives through it, that it's really hard to give yourself the grace that you need during this season of being a mom, because there's always somebody who's doing more and they're a mom, and there's always somebody who is a better mom and all organic and yeah. and a size 4 after having 5 kids. And there's just always that aspect to it. And so my challenge even this summer is, because I've realized, you know, as a creative person, I love to write stories, I love to sing music, and I naturally go into a world of fantasy very naturally. And so what I've been challenging myself this summer is to live in a world of reality, and that is that to live exactly in the moment as much as I can, instead of letting my dreams and my kind of achievement personality always looking ahead and always thinking, what can I do to make tomorrow better or to achieve this dream? Just even taking a moment to live in the, you know, the real mess of what kids are. And so I remember one day specifically, my daughter Ava, who just turned 7 yesterday, came in the bedroom, and she's not very extravagant with her compliments or her love. She's not a snuggly child. And she looked at me, and just out of her heart, she said, "I love you, Mommy." Mm. And I know that if I'm in my normal mode, I just kind of let those words bounce off of me. Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, she loves me. She's my girl. But I took a moment and I just let myself feel that love, and what a great achievement that is, that this strong-willed, feisty little girl mm-hmm. took time to tell me that she loved me. And it was weird, when I let myself soak it in, it's almost like I could feel it, I don't know, trickle down into my toes. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I let myself totally feel the moment. And I have this theory, which I want to try if I can, that if, as moms, we let ourselves live in the reality of the moment, even those of us that are driven to achieve and have dreams for the future, that somehow those dreams will become even more realistic and even more grounded. And maybe even we can take actual steps towards those in a more realistic way, even though we're afraid to kind of let go of that, to be more in the moment with our kids and families. So I guess that would be how I've seen it trickle down into motherhood a bit more recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing.
Do you feel like it's not normal? Were you 24 when you guys moved to Armenia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I remember you wrote a book that you gave me whenever I was there about kind of your journey to Armenia. But I would imagine you and Nick, when did you meet in high school?
Yeah, we met at high school. We met at a teen youth camp, believe it or not, and we are proof that a camp romance can last.
You're the one couple.
I was 14 and Nick was 16, and my parents had a rule that I could not date until I was 16. So he would just write me letters. This is before email or cell phones, and he'd call me on that phone on the wall. And and then as we grew older, we started to meet. We lived about 45 minutes apart, which my dad was very happy about. And we started to meet, and then Nick was one grade ahead of me. He went off to college, and I ended up going to the same college, and we continued, and then got married about halfway through our college years.
Wow. So, yeah, sorry, I made you fill in the whole backstory on my way to the question. But do you think that moving to Armenia and then Tallinn, you kind of touched on that, but as far as, like, the mothering thing, because I think I have a good core group of friends and my parents live in town and I have one child, and sometimes I think I'm about to lose it, and I'm like, you had no friends or family around, kids in a different country where not only did you not have family around to help, but you didn't know the language. Like, did that, how did you... What on earth?
If you're not depressed, I'd be very shocked.
No, but, like, I think that that's, like, I mean, that's a huge one. So I think even if somebody's changing cities in the U.S. and they're feeling defeated because they're having issues. Like, you overcame it, and you were, like, in a totally different culture. And once you mastered the language and the people of one culture and region, then you moved again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's like, yeah, I did that.
She's like, that's right.
Well, fortunately, when I moved to Armenia, we were there a good 2 years before we had Oliver, our first son. And so we had the language pretty good by then. But, yeah, you know, I've never had a child and lived around my parents. And so maybe in some ways I don't know what I'm missing. But I do see pictures of people who live close to family. And, of course, I always get a little bit jealous just because I think of the richness that those children have in their lives. But as far as me, in some ways I'm thankful that I have lived overseas because childcare is so much cheaper than it is in America. And so since I've been a working mom all these years, working in projects in both Armenia and Estonia, you know, I've been able to afford, you know, the whole time, probably 20 hours a week of help. And those people have loved my children like their own. And, you know, my kids now, I can see them, you know, they never, it's a different kind of strength. You know, they don't have the strength of growing up with their cousins and their aunts and uncles and family around, but they have a different kind of strength in that they can move into any room, any sort of public event, and they'll just sit down and feel right at home because they're used to being in this kind of, you know, different settings, different cultures, not always knowing everything going on. And so it brings out different giftings. But I would say, I often think about that, that if I had to be a mom in America and my husband was, you know, a pastor here, I wouldn't be able to afford any help and I may be living away from my parents. And I think that would be a challenge. But fortunately, it's worked out for me overseas and that I've had great babysitters and people to help out.
So you mentioned Ava is a strong-willed child.
Yes.
I've heard that you're an expert with tips for raising a strong-willed child. Will you either, please educate
I don't remember
me?
If you said I'm an expert or it was a topic you liked, but we'll go with expert. Because she's raised, right? And that strong-willed child just learned Estonian, which is like one of the hardest languages in the world.
Yeah, they say.
Man.
I don't know. I think we'll have to wait till Ava's probably 22 until I can say if I've been successful.
How old is Ava?
Strong-willed child.
7.
She just turned 7.
All right.
And, yeah, I'm pretty passionate about that. It takes a lot of courage to raise a strong-willed child. And I remember when Ava was 1 and the first time she met her American pediatrician, she was already 1 year old, and so her personality was already pretty, you know, very visible, and she could walk around the office, and she was just wooing all the nurses and the attendants working there, and she was just getting her way. I think she convinced, you know, the nurses to give her 5 stickers instead of the normal 1, and you know, all those things that you get at the doctor's office. And I remember the pediatrician looked at me, and she said, "This girl is not going to have any problem getting whatever she wants her entire life." And then she said, she goes, "You're in for an adventure." She said, "These strong-willed children are very hard to raise when they're young." But she said, "If you get your values deep down in her, hardly anything will be able to pull her away from those values when she's old."
Aww.
And so I've really held on to that. It was just a simple word that the pediatrician said, you know, after observing so many kids. But I've really held on to that. And it's true, raising a strong-willed child is quite embarrassing when they're young, because they'll be the ones that have the, you know, screaming attack in the checkout at a grocery store, and they're straightening their legs. You have to carry them out. Everybody's staring at you. I remember just, you know, 1.5 years ago, we were at a theater here in America. I was visiting my parents for Christmas, and we'd flown in from Estonia, and Ava really wanted some popcorn, so she started her thing. And I remember the person in front of me goes, "What a brat." And you get all that sort of stuff, and you get, you know, the eyes and everybody who thinks that they know how to raise a strong-willed child because they really never had one.
Right, right.
But I see it as an absolute privilege. I really do. And I think this comes also from me. My parents, you know, told me I was a super strong-willed child. And not saying that I turned out that great or anything like that, but I think it's a privilege because somehow God entrusted me with this very strong, powerful person. And I think I can choose to do one of two things. I can choose to try to break her and make her fit in so that I don't get the, oh, wow, what a brat sort of comments, or the rolled eyes, or the, you know, people giving me their comments on parenting. I can choose to do that, or, you know, so I can break her and make her try to fit the norm. Or I can just set some boundaries and help her learn how to fly. And I can, I guess my whole mentality is that I want to be such a loving, calm, peaceful, strong role model in her life that, you know, with these strong-willed children, you can't force them to do anything, but that she will eventually choose to want to be like me. And so that's what I try to do with her. And I'm not perfect, and I hope she knows it's okay to not be perfect. But when we break a strong-willed child when they're very young, like, you know, my parents, I love them very much, but they always say that they broke me, you know, that I was strong-willed and they broke me. And by the time I went to school, all the teachers thought I was a perfect student. And this is a true story. Mm-hmm. And they could also say, look, you turned out great. You're doing well. And we could say true story. But I also see, when I went to counseling that, you know, they also trace me with my anorexia and these feelings I have of not being okay with who I am. They can trace that often back to those children who are broken. Because if you can imagine at a very young age, you're telling a child that this natural way that you are, this strong leader, is not okay. And I need you to be something different to be acceptable by culture and so that I'm not embarrassed. And so I try not to do that with Ava, even though it is hard at times. And it shoots down my pride as a mom often when we're in public. But I just have such a confidence in her that she's going to grow up and be very kind and very strong and very calm, even though I don't see it right now.
That's good.
That's what I'm trying to do. And like that same pediatrician told me once when I asked about Oliver, because this boy, my boy, would not eat one vegetable, or the only he would eat was a banana. And, you know, I try to eat really healthy. And I just remember saying to her, I just don't know what to do. And she said, from, you know, all my times, years as a pediatrician, I found this to be true. You keep eating what you eat, which is healthy. And on his plate, you always put a little bit of what you eat. And she said, watch, your children will learn from you, and eventually they will eat like you do, without you forcing it, without you, you know, saying you can't leave the table until you, you know, chow down two pieces of broccoli. They will eventually become like you. And I've seen that too. My son now is eating a little broccoli, and he's eating some apples and other things like that. And I think how much more true for us as moms that our children are going to become who we are in our core, who we are when no one is looking. You know, who we are in the moments, like you said, Katie, when your child is painting everywhere.
All three of them. All three of the children.
I hope they're not like me in that moment. It's not a good one.
You know, they absorb it. That's who they become. And right. So I think that's the same for strong-willed children. And so, but we'll see. You know, I still get a lot of people who I know disagree with me and how I'm proceeding with Ava. I think they think I should be a lot more strict and harsh on her. So we'll see. Maybe she'll turn out and be horrible, but this is what my gut says right now, and so this is what I'm going with.
I love that. I'm wondering, and if you don't have an example already, it's totally fine, but I would think, I'm guessing that my 2-year-old Nora is a strong-willed child. That's my official guess. Yeah. So earlier today, just a real-life example, she didn't get the thing she wanted at Hobby Lobby, and she threw a fit. And I heard on the other side of the aisle, an older woman go, wow. And I immediately just felt, I mean, I was so excited going to Hobby Lobby. I was excited walking in. I was excited about the project we're about to make. And I just felt my entire being just deflate with that one comment. And my instant thought was, we need to leave immediately, as fast as possible. This date is over. This day is ruined. And that was my internal thing. And while I didn't panic outwardly, I internalized that entire moment, and I took it out on myself, and I took it out on the day. And so I'm just wondering, like, put yourself in that situation. Do you have any real life, I don't know, is it self-talk? Is it, what is it? And what gets you through that strong-willed moment when you're in public and you feel so embarrassed?
Yeah, it is hard. It really is hard. And I think that's one thing I sometimes deal with the most, is sometimes feeling like I'm a bad mom. But I think it takes, like I said, a lot of courage. And a lot of courage that, once again, like I spoke about earlier, you know, where does even our child find its value and its being from? Is it from what that lady says in the aisle next to you? Or is it from what you see as, you know, a strength that literally when she's older is going to carry her through a very difficult situation? And it's that, you know, trying, it's so hard in the moment, but trying to always gain that perspective. And I remember, I have a son, Oliver, who's 11, and I had my own journey with him, and that he's very calm. He's not the type that would ever get the, you know, the wandering eyes from an old lady in the next aisle or anything like that. But he has his own issues, and that would be that he's super sensitive. He's super smart, so he tests as, like, gifted on the test, but the flip side of that is he also has this ADD, attention deficit disorder. And once I was with his psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist gave me some really good advice, I felt, because I was crying to the psychiatrist, feeling like I hadn't done enough for Oliver to make him really succeed. Like maybe I'd pampered him too much or tried to help him too much with his disorganization and all these things. And he looked at me and he said, why are you crying? He said, your child learns just as much from how you come out of these situations and through your mistakes as anything else. And he said, you know who your child will become. He said, your child will become who you see that they will become. Mm. And he said, what do you see your child's becoming? Do you see him as being someone who will never be able to hold down a job because he can't organize the details? Do you see him? Do you live in fear for him of what people will think of him as he gets older and he struggles? He said, when you look at him, do you see him as someone who's going to achieve, who's going to overcome, who's going to be a leader, who's going to be that scientist using that gifted mind he has? And he said, you speak that into your child, even when you don't see it, and they're going to become what you believe they're going to become. And so I do it with Ava. Sometimes she'll scream or she'll say even like, I hate you, or something like that. And I just look at her and I said, Ava, I said, this is not who you are. You are kind. You are calm. So I almost speak to her the opposite of what she is in that
exactly,
moment.
Exactly, yes.
That's and so I think if we as moms can somehow really, really believe what our children can become in the very best version of themselves, then I think they'll rise up to it. And so even in those moments, if somehow we can get that perspective, it's hard. We're going to fail most times. But if we can get that perspective, I think it's really, really key.
Oh, that's so good. And I will, I'll jump onto that. That is actually a household rule that I established that then I sometimes forget, and my husband keeps me accountable on, is that we don't speak the thing they're being. We speak what we want them to be, what we see in them, what our hope is for them. And then an extra convicting layer for me is it's true for my spouse too. Like I want to speak into him the things that I want, you know, him to be, that I see in him that he has the potential to be, instead of it's so easy to nitpick him and say where he's failing instead of building him up and, you know, speaking the things I aspire him to
be. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's really
that's
good.
So good. And I have a whole 8 months under my belt.
Shaylee's speaking lots of things.
And I'm talking to Opal, like, you are such a good sleeper, Opal. Those teeth don't even bother you, Opal. No, but I think that I could easily see how you could slip into the fear, having fear of what they're going to turn out like it's something that's completely just spinning out of control, like that you're just watching unfold. But to just, I don't know, that's encouraging to look at it that way.
Yeah, that's very encouraging. This is good stuff. You're kind of blowing my mind.
I knew she would like you. I kept it pretty vague, but I was like, I'm pretty sure that Katie's going to be like, tell me more, Olivia. Tell me more.
I would say, too, just to kind of circle back to my paint fiasco, I don't think I handled that situation very well. I think I lost my temper, and I don't lose my temper very often. But I think like the beauty in that too is that then later, after I calmed down and after they were all cleaned up and we cleaned up all the mess, you know, we got to settle down and be calm, and I got to talk to Callie about how I misbehaved, and I had to, you know, I got to ask for her forgiveness too. And I feel like that's that's the beauty in it, is that look how mom made a mistake too, and how that doesn't define me either. And so I asked for her forgiveness, she asked for mine, and I don't know. And sometimes I think that's even a more powerful lesson than if you feel like you're just nailing it 100% of the time, you know?
For sure. Vulnerability is really key. And then our kids learn how to be that way with others as well. Mm-hmm. So it's great.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Whew! I feel like, man, I have so much to marinate on.
Man. And she speaks three languages?
Wait, what? I love that she's like, oh, I learned Armenian in like 2 years.
Yeah, it was, we had before it. The kids, so we had 2 years to learn the language.
I'm like, man, I need to learn a language, like English. I needed to learn English. Okay, so we're going to go into a more lighthearted, our lightning round. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
Okay. I feel like you gave us so many good nuggets to marinate on that we need to bring it light. We need to make a light now. Okay. Shaylee, you want to lead us on this?
Oh, sure, sure. Okay. So what is one trick for staying on task? This can be in parenting or work or home life.
Oh, gosh.
Lightning. Just kidding.
Okay. I would say a good playlist to listen to.
Ooh, I like that. Good.
What's something you'd go back and tell yourself at 18?
Don't let anyone steal the gold that you are.
Oof. Ooh. Oof. You nailed that one.
Okay. The gold.
Let's see. I don't know. That question doesn't really apply.
Okay,
moving on. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be?
You can go physical. You can go anything.
You can do anything.
Is this mostly women listening?
Yeah. I think like moms are probably stay at home moms or creative entrepreneur women.
Except for Marty.
Okay. Okay. Bigger boobs.
Yes. We have one that's on, we have an episode we haven't released yet, but, it's on baby sleep training. So the whole time we're like, but like, it's only going to be moms, right? So we can do this. Like, we can talk about this thing or whatever.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Okay, fill in the blank. I thought I might be naturally good at blank, but I was wrong.
I thought I'd be naturally good at roller skating, but I was wrong.
I want to hear that story now.
I know, that sounds good.
What do you wear when you're at your house? And I am so, I can't read English, and you can read all of the languages, so this is fun. What do you wear when you're working from your house or just hanging out of your house? Does that one even apply?
Yeah,
I think I personally fund the workout clothing industry. I'm usually in some sort of pair of yoga pants and a top, and I don't dress up very often beyond that.
Yeah, I love it. Do you watch Netflix? Do you have a Netflix show?
I don't. This is one of my things I need to get better at is spending time watching. But the last show I finished, the whole show of.
You're the first person that's like, I really need to get a handle on my life and stop like journaling my introspective thoughts and like watch more Netflix to be a well rounded. Everyone's like, I need to stop watching 8 hours of Netflix every single night.
I know, I'm one of those weirdos, I know.
No, you're good. Okay, so you mean to get into it, but what do you spend time doing instead?
Well, the last show I finished was Downton Abbey, so yes. I didn't allow myself to watch that. And what do I do instead? I don't have a lot of downtime. Like I said, this is something I need to improve on, but I exercise maybe.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you really need to improve.
Man, I'm just a terrible human.
Really, less exercise, more Netflix, I think.
Describe your perfect day off.
A perfect day off.
It could be anywhere with kids or without kids. No pressure.
Yeah, it would be without kids. And it would be, it would be probably, like, where are those countries? Maybe, Shayla, you've been there where they have, like, the little luxury hotel huts over the ocean, like out.
Oh, in the I think, like, Thailand has those.
Yeah.
Or, like, in the Bahamas.
Yeah. Where I could go to sleep listening to the ocean waves and I could rest and read and just think and pray. Yeah, listen to music.
I'm gonna Facebook message Nick and be like, hey, listen up. I know what she wants.
Next anniversary.
How long have you been married?
It was 18 years in May.
Gosh, man. Boom. For 20. We'll aim for 20-year anniversary.
Yeah.
We'll get you. Yeah. We'll get Sounds you there. Cool. By that time, the podcast will have taken off huge, and Katie and I will send you we'll a care it. Package.
It'll oh, be, sure.
We'll yeah. buy you a hut.
Eventually, Skype's going to send us some money, I think.
Skype's, yeah.
what's something people probably don't know about you?
That actually, I love to dance in the car and play music very loudly.
Ooh, dance driving.
Dance driving.
Dance driving. Do you have a most frequently used emoji?
Probably the winking emoji.
Yeah. I felt like Olivia was going to say, I felt like the answer was going to be, I don't use emojis because I feel like people are more valued when you send full words to them. And I was going to feel that. Okay, good. Good.
Okay, and then I have a bonus one. You've been married 18 years.
Yep.
Do you have any just generic marriage advice?
Yes, and that is that you married a stranger. And what I mean by that is even Nick and I were discussing here, some counselors say recently, when you get married, you're committing to be married to three versions, three different people. Because as you go through life, we're bound to change, and we even our goals change, our dreams change, we age, our health changes, our looks change. And so someday, there's a pastor out of New York City, Timothy Keller, he wrote a book called The Meaning of Marriage. He says, you have to learn how to remain committed and to love the stranger you find yourself waking up next to.
That's so good. That is, because you hear so many people that say they aren't who they were when I married them.
Right, right. And so it's that constant exploration, that constant curiosity and just knowing it's going to happen and that you are committed to love that person even as they change and you keep making beauty out of the mess. Mm.
Preach. I love that. Keep making beauty out of the mess, like a beautiful mess. Olivia's also great friends with Emma and writes for their blog. No, I'm just kidding. No. She's not.
That's amazing. Okay, so for our last segment here, you're going to teach us
one phrase in Estonian, the hardest language on earth. And you passed the national exam or whatever. I saw that, like an update.
Yeah, well, don't make my Estonian sound too great here. It's not that great.
We don't know any, though.
Yeah, the EU countries have these exams, and you have to, you know, they're government exams that they require immigrants to go through it to be able to work certain jobs or to get longer residency permits. So Nick and I made it through the B1 exams. You have A1, A2 are the kind of beginner. B1 is like low intermediate. And so now we can work as a cashier or a taxi driver.
Ooh.
And we can also get a 5-year residency permit instead of the normal 2-year. So my Armenian was a lot better than my Estonian, but I'm determined to keep working on it.
So wait, you can be employed as a taxi driver or a cashier or like
those really low entry low entry jobs.
But you don't have to. It's not like you're driving taxis now. Okay.
It's what they require. It's the minimum language requirement to be able to apply for those jobs.
Okay. So. Wow. Okay. So you don't have to tell us what it means, but you just teach us the phrase and then we'll try to guess what it means.
Yeah. And then we'll repeat it back to you and you can tell us our grade.
Yeah. You can tell us what level what we would level. Be on.
What our occupation would be.
Okay. You ready? I'll try this.
We're ready.
Let's do Shaylee first.
Okay.
Because you've been there.
Well, if you heard the language, if I like made fun of a language, like that I tried to like make up to make it sound like the hardest language, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
My accent is horrible. I can already tell you that. So for any Estonian listening, I apologize.
There are some people in that region that listen. I don't know where they're from. Well, maybe it's you. Maybe it was you.
She's like, no, I've never listened.
The first time I listened was yesterday in America. So I think you do have some closet listeners over there in Estonia. Okay. And once again, please forgive me, all Estonians. My accent is not good.
But they're going to love you.
Maybe. So I'm doing one phrase for each of you. Is that what I'm doing?
Yep. And then you can tell us who wins.
Okay.
I'm going to be a cab driver.
Shaylee, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. All right. Ma elan estis, aga ma olen Americlane.
Ma ala estis, amlagen nelemerigais.
That's good.
Not bad, not bad.
What'd she say?
Well, I don't think I said it.
What'd she try to say? What was that?
Wait, we have to guess. I'm an American speaking on a podcast.
Oh, you got half of it. So I live in Estonia, but I'm an American.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
I thought I had, there good. Was some sort of American-y sound.
Okay, I'm okay, ready.
Katie's turn.
Okay, Katie. Minu nimi on Olivia. Yama olen kom kumen seitsa astat vana.
Minu minu on Olivia. Switzerland.
No.
No? Okay, I'm going to guess it's my name is Olivia. My new best friend is Katie Day. We are taking a trip to Switzerland. No?
Wow. Pretty good. My name is Olivia and I'm 37 years old.
Oh.
That's where was the part about us being best friends? No, I think did you miss that part?
The 37 years old one was real long in Estonian.
Yeah.
It was like a lot of things.
Yeah, no, that was really good. Okay, so who did better?
Be honest.
Well, you each got half. I would say it's an official tie.
Official tie? Okay, so what job do you think we could have?
Let's see.
Podcast in English.
Maybe at the American Embassy. You can.
Oh my goodness!
American
Perfect.
Embassy will
because
do
you
it.
Can speak English.
And by the way, for those of you who like Estonia sounds so like distant, Tallinn, Estonia is one of the coolest cities in the whole world. And it's like old historical, cool, like structures of old buildings mixed with really modern, new,
cool,
like. Really cool. So it'll be like an old building with like a new modern thing built on the top of it.
That's amazing.
It's really beautiful.
Okay, well, Olivia, you are amazing. Can you tell our listeners where to find you?
Sure. So I'm on Facebook and Olivia Puccini. I have a writer's page as well as my personal page, which would be Olivia Linoe Puccini, but I think you can just look it up. Puccini is Puccini. And I have a website, oliviapuccini.com. I'm on Instagram, Olivia Puccini. I sing, so I have some things on SoundCloud and YouTube.
Awesome.
And our church info would be on focuschurch.ee.
Very cool.
And did you write a book? Did I hear that?
Oh, yeah, I wrote a book, yes.
Everyone writes books.
I wrote a book that is a memoir of my first 8 years in Armenia and all the stories I didn't want to forget and the challenges I faced. And so it is on Amazon. And the name of that book is I Am There, Armenia.
Awesome. We'll put all that in the show notes too so that people can find you if they didn't jot that down while they were driving.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm going to go read your book now.
Yeah, I have it. I have it up on that shelf.
I'm dead serious. I will read that book, Olivia.
Oh my goodness. So thank you. Olivia is the most patient person. She had to sit for 15 minutes while I figured out how to record audio before this. So thank you again for that.
Yes.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for asking me to be a part.
Yeah, of course. We'll tell everyone, tell all your little kitties hello and tell Nick we said hey.
I will.
Okay.
How do we say goodbye in Estonian?
Goodbye, Heraga.
Heraga! Perfect. Thank you so much, Olivia.
Thank you.
Hey, Olivia, are you there?
Olivia? Skype? Son of Skype!
What if it's like, are you there? Skype! Like, Skype.
Thanks, guys, for listening. During the week, feel free to email us at our email. It's shayleeandkatie@gmail.com. Any questions, any comments for sponsorship inquiries, you can email all that information right over.
Yeah, and follow us on Instagram at shayleemurphy and at okatieday. We ask for lots of suggestions, topics, input throughout the week. We are so pumped you guys are listening. If you want to be our best friend, you'll leave us a review on iTunes. That helps promote the podcast within the iTunes store, and it keeps it going. So thanks, guys, so much.
And it's like Christmas every time we get a new one.
It really is.
We have a really sad Christmas.